So there's a day in June 2020 where she is walking in downtown Portland with her fiance, and she gets a phone call. This is from a security team member that she got connected with through Nike. The person says, "We have some troubling news. Your stalker has rented a place 2 miles away from your house." And if that wasn't bad enough, she's also told that he has posted on LinkedIn that he was coming to Portland specifically to kill you.
To be a professional long-distance runner often means training for hours a day alone, out on trails or city streets. So, what happens when that very activity no longer feels safe? Today, the story of an Olympian who faced years of online threats that seeped into real life, all coming from a man she's never met. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, September 21st. This is ESPN Daily. Paula Levine, thank you for joining us to talk about a story that I really can't get out of my head.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Paula Levine is an investigative reporter for ESPN, and with our colleague Aish Kumar, she reported on runner Emily Enfeldt and a stalker who jeopardized Emily's athletic career.
So Emily Enfeldt is a former Olympic runner. She placed 11th in the 10,000 meter at the 2016 Olympics in Rio. She won a bronze medal in the same event at the 2015 World Championships. She claimed the NCAA title in the 3,000 meter while at Georgetown, where she went to college. She went to high school in Ohio, where she still holds the record for the girls' 1,600 meter.
Here are the final meters, running as a team, and now Chariot takes command again. Chariot will win it. Burka second. Huddle will be edged by Enfeldt at the line. Enfeldt gets third.
She's sponsored by Nike, which becomes relevant to this story. And at the time this whole ordeal started, she was training with the hope of getting a spot on the team for the Olympic Games in Tokyo.
And so Emily's on pace for the Olympics. She has a fantastic running career, and she's running, she's working toward the Games, when a stranger, Paula, gets in touch with her online.
Yeah, so as my co-reporter Aish Kumar and I discovered, this whole ordeal starts in April of 2018. Enfeldt received a Facebook message from a guy who identified himself as Craig Donnelly. And he introduces himself as a USA track and field coach and should post it on social media, as many athletes do, things that she was going through.
Right, like about an injury. In this particular case, she posted something about being hurt.
And so he was responding to that and recommends some things for her recovery. You know, she doesn't really respond to him. He keeps sending these messages. At the onset, they are related to him trying to give her coaching advice and talking about the injuries, but they're very persistent. And so after several of these messages, she says, "Look, stop contacting me," and she blocks him.
And that's like standard operating procedure, I feel like, at this point. You block the person after they keep bothering you, and you expect for it to stop at that point. But what happens next?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people get messages like that, and usually that stops it. But then things escalate. It goes from the Facebook messenger to her actually getting phone calls from an unknown number and voicemails with strange messages.
"Hi, Emily, Craig here. My life's purpose has changed from inspiring others to positively impacting the lives of others. Definitely a worthwhile cause. I do say to most people that if you truly believe in something, then you must be willing to die for it. But there's certainly more to that statement of someone. as yourself, an amazing woman of God, or my future brothers in arms. I will be entering an Air Force Special Operations Unit in a leadership role shortly.
And the messages, Paula, like the one we just played here, I mean, these are long, they're rambling, he talks about all kinds of things that don't make sense at all, including references to Emily personally, even though, again, she has never met this man.
Yeah, Pablo, so now is when it starts getting really weird. He's reaching out to her in several different ways, emails and voicemails, and in the emails, he starts talking about the two of them getting married. And one specific email he sends in July of 2018 had a subject line of wedding preparation. And in the email, Donnelly writes, "The ring should be here on Tuesday and my suit by the end of the week, all black with probably my favorite light blue power tie." And then it goes on. "The archbishop who issued the annulment or one of his clergy will be officiating. We can cover the rest of all the preparations together, including obtaining a license where you should keep your last name." And then it's signed, "Everlasting Craig." And then he says something that really freaks her out, which is he says he will take a red-eye flight to Portland for the ceremony at 2 p.m. the next Sunday. And I think this is the point where she realizes there is really something wrong here.
So hold on a second here, Paula, because this is already extraordinarily disturbing. This is somebody who she had blocked, who is now sending her emails about getting married and their wedding in all of this detail. And when she gets this stuff, who is she talking to in her life about it? What do they tell her to do?
Well, her main confidant is her fiance, Max, and she's also shared these messages with her coach and with her agent. But that's not the end of where this goes.
So it is clear now, Paula, that the stalker not only has her phone number, but he also knows where she lives. How does Emily learn that part?
So the next thing is she gets a message from FedEx that she has an expensive package that she has to sign for. And she believed correctly that this package was from Craig Donnelly. She doesn't open these packages, but now what really scares her about that is that it's proof that he actually knows where she lives.
I was like crying to FedEx, and then I called FedEx customer service, and I was like, "Can I block packages from this person? Like, I can't receive, like, won't receive packages from this person." And then I set up a PO box. He said he's gonna send me packages, and I don't think I processed it. He sent me an email on like Sunday, and then that packages came on, or on Tuesday I had a package, and then I just like broke down and I started crying. I like didn't know what to do.
So at this point, Paula, we're early on in the story. What does Emily know about this person stalking her, this guy named Craig Donnelly?
Emily doesn't know much more than his name. And she saw in his message that he claimed to be a USA track and field coach. And she had reached out to USA track and field and never heard back. Now, actually, after the fact, we did find out that he actually was registered with USA Track and Field as a coach shortly after 2016. So it's kind of unclear what his status actually would have been at the time had they got back to her.
But this guy seems to have, at this point, taken over her life, invaded her privacy, her brain. When did Emily decide to contact the authorities for the first time?
This is all sort of playing out in July of 2018. And she contacts the Portland police. She files a report. And one of the things she's advised to do is to appeal for a protective order. And she does that in the Multnomah County Court. She's successful in getting that protective order. But as any law enforcement person will tell you, it's really only as good as the paper that it's written on. It doesn't really give her a real sense of security.
And is Craig served with that paperwork? That is, in effect, the police are aware of him officially and he accepts that this order has taken effect?
Yeah, he actually has, as anyone, the opportunity to show up in court and contest it. And that doesn't happen. And so the permanent order is put in. And yes, he is informed by the police in Hillsborough, New Jersey, which is where he is living and the area that he's from, that he is indeed served with the orders.
And for Emily's sense of security at this point, how do you characterize that now that the protective order is in existence?
Well, she is feeling like there's a real sense of inaction. She's got this order and this guy is still out there, and she does not feel that there's really any follow-up. He's supposed to honor the rules of the protective order, and you really can't do anything until those rules are violated.
Mm.
So despite some sense of normalcy that she gets, this was just sort of the calm before the real storm.
All right, Paula, we'll learn more about this guy who invaded Emily's life after the break.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Paula, I know you and Aish spent months trying to piece together the backstory of who Craig Donnelly, Emily's stalker, actually is. What did you learn about him?
When Aish first showed me Emily's Facebook messages, I'm thinking, okay, this is some guy who is obsessed with Emily. And this is something so many other women have had to deal with online. And that's how we were initially pursuing the story. How women, especially those who are well-known and have a big social media following, how they deal with stalkers and all the horrendous circumstances that come with dealing with that kind of harassment. So I'm asked to dig into this guy, Craig Donnelly. And then when I start looking at all of his records, it becomes clear that this story has another layer. So one of the first things that I found on Craig Donnelly was a court document requesting guardianship, which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, that's something that you usually see sort of with a minor, with a child, right? And as I was reading into it, I realized that it was filed by his wife at the time, who was trying to establish legal guardianship over him because he had suffered a traumatic brain injury and was sort of unable to make these decisions for himself. On April 27th, 2016, Craig Donnelly was running at a lake near Omaha, Nebraska, and he fell. He hit his head and he underwent surgery. And during the surgery, doctors removed a portion of his skull and a section of the left side of his brain. And one other thing that comes up is that he had epilepsy and that this was most likely the result of an epileptic seizure. And so some of the details on this come out from this GoFundMe site that his wife establishes. Let me read you one of the postings from May of 2016, just so you get a sense for how serious this was.
Please.
It says, Craig remains in the ICU. Doctors and staff are hoping to move him to the rehabilitation section of the hospital this week. He is awake and interactive, but still on a feeding tube and unable to walk. Doctors have yet to determine the full impact.
What happens to his life, to his marriage.
Craig's former wife is a woman named Brandi Thompson, and they met while they were both running track at Oklahoma Baptist back in somewhere around 2008, 2009. They moved around a bit, but were in Nebraska when Craig's accident occurred. And Brandi never agreed to speak to us, but according to people that knew them and from some of the court records I found, it was clear that Brandi was really trying to make an effort to get Craig some treatment. But it was really difficult to make that happen, and in the end, she wasn't able to get him all the help that he needed. She ends up having to file for bankruptcy and eventually relinquishes her legal guardianship hold over him. And Craig then takes one of their cats and goes to New Jersey to live with his mother, and Brandi files for divorce.
So as you're talking to the people who know Craig, how do they describe what he's like? What help are they trying to get him?
So they describe him as saying things that are just really impossible to be true, that he has a relationship with these famous singers, that he still talks about his training and that he's posting times that are like completely unrealistic, like world record times. You know, one of his teammates reaches out to him and is being like, you know, seems like you're going through a tough time. And Craig responded and just sort of shut him down, said, you don't understand, and then blocks him on everything. You know, this guy is also like, you know, should I call the police on him? Like not to get him arrested, but to get him to some help. And this guy tries to reach out to Craig's relatives. And one of the relatives who talked to us, you know, on the condition that that person not be named, said something that really sort of hits home to how hard it is to help someone like this. And this person says they take him in, get him on meds, and toss him back out into the world when his insurance will no longer cover his stay. Then he reverts back to his unhealthy ways. This has been a vicious cycle.
It's this vicious cycle, Paula, because he's in treatment facilities or with relatives, but he doesn't get the kind of consistent care that he would need to stay healthy, is what it sounds like. But he does abide by this protective order, and he is not in touch with Emily for some time until suddenly, once again, he very much is.
So Emily does not hear from Craig Donnelly for 16 months after the protective orders are served. And she's back training, hoping to get a spot in the Olympics. And then, while preparing for her first race of the year, February 2020, Donnelly resurfaces. And this time when he comes back on social media, his tone has changed. He's critical of her. He suggests that he was her coach and that they had a falling out. He says some offensive things about her intelligence, like talks of them being married and divorced and that she owed him money. It's unclear what happened to prompt that, but it is the last thing that Emily Enfield wanted at that point.
Posted like this long message saying like law violators, I don't know, will be persecuted. Like Emily Enfield is convicted by Craig Donnelly of like attempted murder. I will now murder her in Portland, Oregon. I have God's authority to murder her.
Paula, these are outright threats to her life. It's obviously unbelievably terrifying. How does this impact Emily's ability to live her life day to day, to train as a runner day to day?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the nuts and bolts of her career, she is someone who needs to go out and run long distances, often, you know, alone. And that's not something she can do and without feeling just completely threatened. And so it really hampers her ability to do what is her job. And knowing that this man is out there, that this threat is out there, I mean, she can't sleep. She is anxious. We talked to people who work with her, the trainer, medical providers, just saying, look, like, you know, when you've got such an emotional burden like that, it is hard to physically do your best, especially the sleep issues. It is absolutely having an effect on her physical well-being and her performance, at such a crucial time when she is trying to be at her best and to earn a spot on the team for the Tokyo Olympics.
I just took off workouts. I felt like exhausted, like I couldn't. I was just having moments of, I would just start crying. I don't know why. I like couldn't calm myself down.
Also, one of the things that she liked doing was posting on social media, updating her fans and followers. And now she can't really do that either because that's how he's essentially keeping tabs on her.
And so I know from your reporting that Emily and her fiance, they end up fleeing Portland, their home. They go to Atlanta because they are living in fear of what Craig is capable of doing.
So Craig ends up physically coming to Portland and he rents a room at a place that is pretty close to Emily, just 2 miles. And he is interviewed by police. Like they make contact with him. They bring him in for questioning, but he's not arrested. Emily said that she was told was that they were working on an arrest warrant. And in the interim, he leaves the state. And once he leaves the state, then they said it becomes even more difficult for them to pursue him because at that point, despite the severity of what he said, it's a misdemeanor. But there's something else going on here that is not just specific to Emily, but probably to anyone who's been in this situation. These cases oftentimes don't get pursued, don't get prosecuted. And part of that is the way the laws are set up. And what police can do to someone who is posting messages with implied death threats, all of that varies state to state. Unfortunately, for Emily, she lives in a state where it is particularly difficult to prosecute someone for something like this.
Mm.
Oregon has some interesting free speech laws pertaining to its state constitution that makes it tough for prosecutors to successfully go after someone for posting something like this.
Wait, you're telling me that legally speaking in Oregon, that all falls underneath free speech?
Yeah, even if they did get him and they were able to bring him in, they would be pretty limited in what they could do. Now, during this time period, the FBI gets involved. They have more of an ability to pursue this, and they have more resources.
But I also know that Nike is also in this picture because they had this private security they supplied Emily with. Were they supportive of what she was going through as her life is completely turned upside down because of this?
Yeah, Nike got involved in this pretty early when she started telling people about what was going on. And it was from that Nike ordered security that notified her of the LinkedIn message and of the fact that he had moved within 2 miles from her house. Now, at the same time, when she was afraid to be in Oregon, she was afraid to come back, she says that Nike ordered her to return to Oregon to satisfy her race requirements. Now, Aish, my colleague, reached out to Nike, and Nike's official statement is that the company took this matter extremely seriously and put Emily's safety first, saying that it did not mandate what races Emily ran and that those decisions were left up to her.
All right, Paula, coming up, Emily's legal case moves forward.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, so Paula, we're now in March of 2021. It's just a few months before the Tokyo Olympics. Emily has hit this wall with any official channels to finally put a stop to what is longstanding and terrifying, threatening harassment. What does she do next?
So Emily, who is frustrated and angry that she feels nothing has been done on this, she takes her frustrations to social media and she puts this post out on Instagram and she starts it off by saying, "I don't really know where to start and I'm feeling pretty exhausted. I've been stalked, harassed, and threatened by a man I've never met for the last 3 years. He's reached out over social media and email. He's left me voicemails, sent me packages, and threatened my life. He drove across the country to rent a place 2 miles from me after threatening to kill me. I've left Portland for months in order to stay safe. This man is delusional and I don't feel safe. I have no idea where he is now, but his messages have started up again and I can't handle it. I was able to get a court order against this man in 2018, but it hasn't stopped him. I am trying so hard to be kind and stay positive, but I just feel so frustrated and hopeless. I don't know what to do and just want to share for anyone else who's dealing or has dealt with something similar." And that message resonated with women all over responding that they had been through the same thing.
I've never received so many messages, and just the quantity of people who have said they're like have been stalked by an ex-boyfriend and were not able to get anything from it, or they were cyber stalked, or someone in college at their university stalked them, and a couple people who said they were able to get a resolution, but a lot of people who were like, "I dealt with this for six years, or I'm still dealing with this, and it's been over 2 years."
And I truly think that her public outreach was the start of a series of events that does finally bring her some resolution.
And you start asking, Paula, where Emily's stalker is and what law enforcement is doing about this.
So there was an interesting series of events after this happens, because that's when I start making phone calls and asking that question, like, where is Craig Donnelly? And asking the question of law enforcement. And we find out that Donnelly's been arrested in Tennessee. This is on June 4th. I call up the police department down there and I find out that he was arrested not because anyone went out to pursue him in particular, but he actually called the police himself. Mm. That's how they found him. And he called because he felt like he was being scammed and that he had $200 million that someone was trying to steal. And according to the police report, the officers, as soon as they interacted with him, realized that there was a mental health concern here. He did tell them that he had a traumatic brain injury and that he was not taking his medication. They run his ID and they realize, oh, there is this warrant from June 2020 out of Oregon for a violation of a protection order, and they take him into custody.
So just to be clear, he's being held in Tennessee on a misdemeanor charge that he got in Oregon.
So the police officer we spoke to in Tennessee said it's pretty unheard of for a state to seek extradition all the way across the country for a misdemeanor. But that's exactly what Oregon did in this case. However, we found out a few days later that the FBI was actually getting involved again and that he had been taken into federal custody. and we couldn't get a straight answer on why this had happened. Then on June 7th, 2021, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Portland charges Donnelly with cyberstalking and interstate violation of a protection order. And unlike the state charges he was facing in Oregon, these are federal felonies, a much more serious level of offense. I was really curious why, of all the cases out there, the U.S. Attorney's Office would have pursued this one in particular. And they declined to answer that question. But one of the things they did tell me was that this case with Craig Donnelly is one of only 8 cyberstalking cases that the U.S. Attorney's Office in Portland has prosecuted over the past 3 years. Despite the growing advocacy to get these cases prosecuted, it's still very, very rare. And as of August 2021, Craig is still in custody and his case is pending.
Paula, when you step back from this now and you look at what you reported and you see the response that it's gotten now that it's out in the world, what do you think its impact is going to be going forward?
I hope that its impact is on 2 levels. I hope that it speaks to the need for doing something more proactive when women like Emily come forward and report being harassed and stalked. I also hope, though, that it is yet another reminder that the mental health system in this country is far from perfect. Mm-hmm. And that people like Craig Donnelly fall through the cracks. These 2 sort of social ills that intersected in the worst of ways.
What do you think is next for Emily Enfeldt?
Well, unfortunately for Emily, she did not make the Olympic team for the Tokyo Olympics, and she is still hopeful that she trains again, that in the next 3 years or so, she will take another crack at trying to do that. She and her fiance are planning to get married this fall, and she has also committed to continuing to help the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office in whatever way they need to move forward with however they decide to prosecute Craig Donnelly. So, the hope is that she continues to feel safe, that that she can now put this behind her and focus on the next 3 years. And, maybe we will see her on the Olympic team next go around.
Paula Levine, thank you to you and Aish as well for reporting a story that we need to hear.
You are quite welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Craig Donnelly remains in custody in Multnomah County, Oregon. And this month, the judge took his trial off the calendar and ordered Donnelly to undergo psychiatric evaluation to determine whether he is fit to stand trial. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.